Stuart Allen Roosa, Major United States Air Force, astronaut, command module pilot, Apollo 14. Stu, this is your first time into space, right?
That's correct.
Tell us just a bit about where you come from and your educational background. What part of the United States were you born in?
Well, I was born in Durango, Colorado, and I actually left Durango at a fairly early age. My father was employed with the Bureau of Reclamation, and at this time we moved, I'd say generally, throughout the western part of the United States for several years, and then settled down in Oklahoma, where I essentially grew up. I finished grade school, all of my high school, and 1 year of college in Oklahoma. And then at this time I went to the University of Arizona for a second year of college, and then entered aviation cadets. And my field of study was engineering. However, my first love was flying. I always has been. As a boy, I always fascinated with airplanes and models. I had models all over my room. And during World War II, of course, I went to every aviation movie I could find and built all of our models.
You would have just been a teenager then during World War II, right?
That's right. Let me see. 33.
You wouldn't have learned to fly by that time, I don't think.
No. I did not have a chance to fly. I was dreaming of flying at that point and flying my models.
This is a typical story among American boys, isn't it? Is this love of aviation beginning in the model building stages when you're 8, 10, 12 years old?
Well, I can't speak for everybody else, but it certainly was for me.
When did you learn to fly?
Okay, and then during high school, I was in the Civil Air Patrol, and at that time, they did not give instruction in the Civil Air Patrol. I'm not sure what the regulations are now, but I got a little flying time in light aircraft, and you needed 2 years of college to get into aviation cadets. So as soon as I completed my 2 years of college, and in between a few working for the Forest Service in the Northwest for a couple of seasons. I was a smoke jumper one season out of Cape Junction, Oregon for the Forest Service.
You got a nickname of Smokey then, didn't you?
That came up on Apollo 9 when I was Capcom, and I was nicknamed Smokey there because of my previous connection with the Forest Service.
How many jumps did you make?
I made 12. And I finished up that season and had my 60 hours and actually applied for aviation cadets from the Northwest. I left Oregon and went down to the friendly recruiter and I wanted to join the cadets, so went to Oakland and went through all the tests and passed them and got a class assignment in December of 53. Mm-hmm. And it started me on the road to my wings. And then I was assigned to what your first choice, as far as I'm concerned, was a fighter squadron out of gunnery school to Langley, Virginia, and flew 84Fs and F-100s, and made a flight to Europe in an F-100. And I've had two things that I wanted to do. One was to finish up my degree, and the other one was to go to the test pilot school at Edwards. And I did get both of those in, actually in that order. The Air Force has a program under which you apply, and if accepted, you can go back to school on active duty and get your degree. It's called Air Force Institute of Technology Program. I applied for this and was accepted. Went back to Colorado and got my degree in aeronautical engineering.
Mm-hmm. When?
From 58 to 60.
Yes.
And this was, 5 years after I'd been in the Air Force. I went back and finished up my degree. This was 1960, and then I went to Japan.
I would assume that as an active jet pilot, you became interested in the manned space program the minute you heard about it, huh?
Absolutely. I've wanted in the program ever since they announced Project Mercury.
Then how did you apply and how were you accepted?
Okay, well, see, the route at that time to be accepted was to be a graduate of a test pilot school, either the Air Force School at Edwards or the Navy School at Patuxent. And everyone that had been selected up to that time had been a graduate of the school. So my next goal was to go to one of those schools. And my assignment out of Colorado was to Japan, so I came back 2 years later and applied for test pilot school, was accepted at Edwards. That was in 64. And I finished the school, stayed at Edwards working in fighter test ops, and fortunately NASA had a selection, and so I applied for that in the fall of 65 and spring of 66 found me down here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Stu Russo, and good luck throughout the flight.
Thank you.
Stu, would you run through briefly for our listeners the command module changes? As command module pilot, this is something you're well aware of here. After the Apollo 13 accident, tell us about what has been added and the safety measures enacted.
All right, I think I'll start with briefly saying why 13 had the problem, and the loss of an oxygen tank and loss of all power may not be understood, but I'll just very briefly, we get our power in the command module or command service module from fuel cells, and these fuel cells are the reverse of the electrolysis of water that everybody did in their high school physics. And there you passed an electric current through the water and got hydrogen and oxygen out. In our fuel cells, we do the reverse. We take hydrogen and oxygen, combine them in the fuel cell, and get water in which we actually drink, and get our electrical power, which we use to power the spacecraft. And also, the oxygen not only goes to the fuel cells, but it goes to our environmental system. In other words, the oxygen that we breathe. So on 13, when they lost all the oxygen, they not only lost all the power, but also any oxygen to breathe, so they had to use the LEM system. All right, we have now changed. At that time, they were carrying two oxygen tanks that were manifolded together to
the same supply line.
Same supply line. So now on Apollo 14, we have added a third oxygen tank. It is physically located on the opposite side of the spacecraft, opposite side of the service module. So we have a distance separation. We have also put the necessary valves in the line so we can isolate the tank in the plumbing from the other two tanks. So now if we lose the third oxygen tank, we can isolate the other two. If we lose the other two, we can isolate the third one. Mm-hmm. And we will always have oxygen to breathe. Okay, so that solved one problem. The next problem we had to solve was the problem of power. All right, if you lose the other two, you may or may not have enough in the third oxygen tank to supply your environmental oxygen plus your power. So we have added a battery. We call it an aux battery. Or you may hear this term.
Auxiliary battery.
Auxiliary battery. And what it is actually a battery from out of the LEM descent stage. It's an identical LEM descent battery. And we have added this into the service module and put it into the necessary electrical connections whereby we use this as an emergency power source. And this will give us enough power to come back from any point in the mission with the loss of all of the fuel cells. Now we have three additional batteries on board the command module. They're quite small, they're a 40 amp hour battery. And these three batteries must be saved for entry. So our whole mode of operation is we must keep those three batteries to use for reentry, or you've lost the whole ball game.
In addition to this, the engineers analyzed the failure and corrected the cause of the explosion on 13. That couldn't happen again, as I understand.
No. The problem on 13 was they had a fan in the oxygen tank to stir this oxygen. The oxygen actually is not in a gaseous state in the tank. It's in sort of a semi-liquid, semi-gas. You think of a mist is really what it is. And so, or in the original concept was it might stratify or go into layers, so you needed a fan to stir this system. And so the wiring that went to the fans was the problem, and this is where the short happened. Now the fans have been completely removed from all of the tanks. We have heaters in the tanks to keep up the pressure as the oxygen boils off. These heaters are completely encased in a metal. There are no wires that have any direct contact with the oxygen, and the inside of the tank has, like I say, been completely modified, so we no longer have a possibility of the 13 problem.
Thanks very much, Stu Russo. This is Rhett Turner in Houston. Stu, you won't be exactly passive during the lunar orbital period while the lunar module is down on the surface. Tell us about some of your photographic exercises and the problem of keeping that command module in good shape during the lunar orbital period.
All right. I certainly agree with your first statement. I won't be passive. Anybody that would look over the timeline could attest to that. But no, my approach has been that, of course, the main purpose of the 14 mission is to land the limb in Frau Marl. But also you have for some 2 days a lot of sophisticated gear in lunar orbit. So we want to try to get as much scientific return as we can out of this. One of the things that we'll have on 14 that has not been flown in lunar orbit before is a large aerial camera. This has an 18-inch lens. It has image motion compensation to account for the speed of the spacecraft over the ground track.
You're going to freeze the thing you're taking a picture of, huh?
Yes, that's very true. And the number one priority on my activities in the lunar orbit is to take detailed pictures of an area on the moon called Descartes. This will be a landing site for one of the later missions. Descartes is also a high priority landing site as far as the geologists are concerned. We have no photography at this time that can support a landing. So the number one priority will be what we refer to, you may hear the term bootstrap photography, and this just means we'll take pictures that we will use in a later mission for a landing site. So I will use this HICON, that's the name we refer to at HICON, or the Lunar Topographic Camera, LTC.
Mm-hmm.
We always got to talk in letters.
Tell me the things we'll hear you saying.
That's right. So, or you may hear topo camera. This is generally the way we'll pass it
HICON
back.
HICON or topo camera.
Yes. And so these should give us the best pictures by far that have been taken in the Apollo program. Depending on the altitude. Now, I'll take some of these in the low orbit when prior to going back up to the 60-mile orbit. I'll take some of these that will be of an altitude around 7 or 8 miles above the lunar surface.
Mm-hmm. You'll be about 15 kilometers that close.
Okay. Yes, and at this distance, we'll have a resolution of around 3 to 4 feet on our photography. So
that's good enough to know if there's a big rock where you want to land.
That's right. Exactly why we're taking these. And then I'll also take them from the 60-mile orbit because you need a lot of data on the approaches. Okay, so the topo camera is one big thing that I'll be doing. Also using the optics system in the command module, which is a sextant and a telescope, and you track a landmark. As you pass over a landmark, you take various marks and you establish a geometry of that point. And by using the data that the computer reads of the position of your optics and the attitude of the spacecraft and the ground's knowledge of your orbit, you can accurately determine the location of the landmark you're tracking. And this is used in various ways. One is to plan later missions. One is to make maps of the moon. The other one is to better determine the shape of the moon. So I track, I've really forgotten the number, but I track, I don't know, 15 landmarks, maybe something like this. Also, have a couple of more. I have some photography on what we call dim light photography. But the darkest area that man has ever been able to get into will be what the scientists, or what we would refer to as the double umbra, or the backside of the moon, really. Mm-hmm. So when you're on the backside of the moon, You're in the darkest environment that you can put human.
No light from the sun is coming around there, no reflection from the earth.
No earth shine, no sunlight, absolute darkness. So to take advantage of this unique laboratory, I'll be taking some very high speed or a very high ASA rating film, black and white film, and be taking pictures of some phenomena that we cannot photograph very well, certainly from the ground. However, they've had some taken from Earth orbit, but here you have the air glow, the atmosphere, and so forth to contend with.
You'll be aiming into space, away from the surface of the moon.
Away from the surface of the moon, sir. And these will, you'll hear names like the Gegenschein photography, the zodiacal light photography, the galactic survey photography. All of these are attempts to photograph very, very dim light phenomena that do exist in the celestial sphere, and we'll be using the dark side of the moon as a laboratory to take these pictures. So on quite a few of the dark side passes, I will be doing this type of photography. Also on 14, for the first time, we'll be attempting to photograph the lunar surface in Earthshine. Now, as you look up and you see a half moon, well, the sun is reflecting off of half of the moon, but you're also getting Earth shine on the other half of that moon, just as much as you go out on a clear night and have moonlight or moonshine. And you can, I know on a good clear night at high altitude, you can read a newspaper, you know, by moonlight. Well, the Earth's shine on the lunar surface is many, many, many times the reflection that we get here.
It's larger.
Yes. And also because of our atmosphere, the albedo or the reflective property of the Earth is much higher than the reflective property of the moon. Mm-hmm. So I will, for the first time, and I'll be trying to take some attempting as an experiment to see if we can photograph in Earthshine. And if we can, this will extend on later flights, extend the range at which we can plan for photographic targets, because now, once we pass the Terminator, up to now, we have not attempted any photography.
There are other experiments, too, now that you'll take part in aboard the command module, aren't there?
Yes, there are. Also on 14, we'll be flying four experiments. Now, these will probably not be attempted until we're on the way home from lunar orbit. I could cover those later, or we can go into that right now if you wish.
Tell me about it.
Okay. We have four packages, and what we're looking for in these experiments are to determine gross engineering techniques and approaches to what we can use as experiments on later flights, specifically Skylab and eventually up to the workshop. And the zero-G environment gives you a unique opportunity to do things that you can't do on the Earth. So just briefly, the four experiments, one is liquid transfer. Now, transfer of liquids in zero-G is a problem because of the bubbles and so forth. So we have tanks that we check the engineering design of baffles and tanks. We also check heat convection in zero-G by an experiment. We check how solids solidify. There's a specific experiment in which we have varying specimens, composites, which may have a metal and then a fiber in it. Now, if in zero-G you can really shake this up and it cools completely homogeneous, well, then you have a much better manufacturing method than you do here on Earth, where if you shake it up and let it cool, gravity is going to pull the heavier elements down, so it will not cool homogeneous. This is one experiment, and the other one is a separation of heavier molecules, slanted eventually, we hope, toward the cheap manufacturing of serum in the medicine field.
Now, these are true scientific experiments which might lead to better uses of space in the future, right?
Yes, they are our first attempt, really, to see how well, and really to get, does the theory of zero-G, does it really work out? And also...
Weightlessness.
That's right, weightlessness. And it will help us design the experiments for the Skylab and the workshop, I meant the space station, if not, a final proof or a major breakthrough itself.
Thank you very much, Command Module Pilot Stuart Roosa. This is Rhett Turner in Houston.